It's lights out and away we go. What a match day this was.
Podcasting from Studio 2520, somewhere near Akron, Ohio, and live via the always lovely paid subscription of Zencastr, which creates no technical issues for the podcast. The campus of Otterbein University, Westerville, Ohio. This is Tackling the Chicane. So, our intro music is courtesy of the Pickin' On series, which is a wide catalog of bluegrass covers. It's really good driving music, actually. So, if you're inclined to listen to something slightly different than the norm, I enjoy it very much.
And I'll ask this sort of rhetorically because I know the answer, but is this rock and roll originally by Led Zeppelin?
That's correct. This is Pickin' On Zeppelin. So there's an entire album of Led Zeppelin songs. There's also Pink Floyd. There is, several hard... hard rock covers as well.
I feel like you, this is a long time ago, had a song from this series, Pickin' On the Rolling Stones. I think it was Sympathy for the Devil, maybe.
That's correct.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was out for a drive the other day and was tired of the algorithm that Spotify has become.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like no matter what playlist you choose, it's always just the same basic.
Yeah, you really
60 songs.
You really have to go out of your way to find or to listen to new music, which I've kind of made it my mission to do this year. So that's, I guess, been fun for me. But yeah, the algorithm. You can kind of get trapped into it on Spotify and other services for sure.
It's kind of lame too, because they present it as, you know, like 50 different playlists, but then when you open them up, it's basically the same shit that mm-hmm. you listen to all the time. So
yeah. Yeah. You kind of have to push yourself a little bit, but maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing, but yeah. So Tackling the Chicane back in action after a less than optimal week for me last week in terms of health.
Yeah, well, glad to see that you're feeling much better, and it's always a scary thing when you're a distance away when something like that happens. So don't know how much detail you want to get into with it, but for family listeners, dad, go ahead. Just,
so basically just had the flu last week, except, this particular strain, I suppose, has a pretty awesome side effect of, making you pass out. If you kind of expose yourself to certain stressors. So I was one of four people now on my track team that have experienced this. So basically, and I won't go into some of the gross details, but stressors such as the heat from a hot shower can lower your blood pressure to the point where you actually pass out. So I had the privilege of experiencing that. And as a byproduct of that episode, striking my head in such a way where I was pronounced with a concussion. Very mild. Yeah. Very mild, but.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was, like I said, it's never fun when you're 2 hours away, but
mm-hmm.
all is well and pretty clear cut diagnosis of the flu, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so everything back up to par.
Yeah, we're square. I actually did my impact test. It's what they give you when you have a concussion. So at the beginning of each year, you take it, and it's basically like your baseline. And then if you were to have a concussion when you're trying to get cleared for athletic play again, you take it and they compare results. And apparently I did well enough today to where I am no longer concussed. So that's good.
All right. Good stuff.
Yeah. So, anyways, back in action here. We are kind of inching pretty, and really, if you look at the calendar, we're just 2 weeks away from when we will be previewing our first race for the F1 2024 campaign. It seems like it can't come soon enough, although it's sort of kind of flown by, and I think some of that might have been spurred on by some of the recent driver lineup news that kind of shook the world a few weeks ago. I guess anything since then that you feel is worth mentioning, because obviously there's still the sort of what the hell is going to happen with Signs thing. I don't know if there's just anything else or new you wanted to speak upon with the Lewis Hamilton move since we kind of discussed it the first time?
No, I mean, it's pretty ad nauseum at this point.
Yeah.
we're not going to see the impact of this move until, I predict, well into the campaign this year, probably. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of this particular series is when the jostling will start.
Mm-hmm.
That's by design. It will be interesting to see. Well, these guys are professionals, so they're going to perform at the highest level regardless. But mentally speaking, you know, well, it should make this year interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of claims that McLaren and some other folks have, Mercedes, have really stepped up their game as far as trying to tackle the Red Bull 800-pound gorilla, but we shall see.
I guess to interject a little bit, because I have seen maybe – it seems like every morning I wake up and I see this headline of McLaren thinks they can push Red Bull further than anyone else in 2024. I guess, do you see validity in claims like that, or how close do you think Red Bull is going to get pushed?
Well, this is, they have to present these types of gains to the F1 audience in such a way that gives us some hope
mm-hmm.
that there will be a competitive series this year. There's a lot of clickbait out there.
Yeah.
A lot of clickbait. So you'll see headlines that are shocking, and then you click on it and it's just complete bullshit.
Yeah.
I did see a meme the other day of Verstappen beating the rest of the field backwards on an office chair. I don't know if you saw that one or not.
No, but I can envision that. It's quite funny.
So, I mean, the liveries have been all introduced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of pomp and circumstance. I mean, they do a couple a day for a week until everybody presents their new livery.
Yeah.
Which,
any that have stood out to you?
The Haas car looks good. Haas car always looks good.
Yeah. Performance.
the Williams car continues to be one of my favorites.
I thought they knocked it out of the park again.
Yeah, it's really fast becoming one of my secondary teams to root for, and I think that's going to be my tack this year, is to kind of keep an eye on that team fairly closely.
Mm-hmm.
I have tepid hope that the shift at Haas might inject something different, although I don't know. And then, of course, in the background, we have the Andretti saga that continues. Again, some Beatty articles a week or two ago about, you know, the possibility of them being allowed in, and then it was mostly just more of the same.
Yeah.
So I really think 2026 is going to be their best shot at it. And we've talked about the fact that it's relatively unfair for F1 to say that you can't come in.
Absolutely.
The reasoning behind them saying things like, we don't feel that Andretti can bring any value to us, but we're ultimately invaluable to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a team who has a car under development in a wind tunnel, albeit it's going to be an old car by the time they get a shot again. So they're going to have to reinvent themselves one more time, you know, at the cost of hundreds of millions of dollars. So they have a test mule or test mules that are in the wind tunnel right now that by 2026 will be basically an obsolete platform. So I can't imagine the spreadsheet of money that's being dumped by them just to try to get into the series.
Actually astronomical, because if I'm not mistaken, and Andretti made it very clear they had no problems doing this, but it's something in the neighborhood of $200 million, the fee they would have to pay to enter, before, you know, obviously all the costs that come with running an F1 team. So it's puzzling to me still why F1 was so, I don't know, almost sort of draconian about it, where they basically said that the Andretti name is worthless and that we don't feel they would be competitive. It's still befuddling to me.
Well, and it speaks to the change from the 90s. I mean, Braun entered that 96 season, whatever the year was when Honda decided to get out, and Braun bought the team for basically a British pound or a dollar or something.
But
they only had $100 million budget complete total for both cars.
Yeah.
And what did they do? They came in and they won almost every fucking race, and they won the fucking Constructors' Championship.
Yeah.
So what a story, fairy tale story that would be if they're allowed in 2026 and have some kind of success. That would be something else. I have some kind of hope that who knows. Maybe that'll happen. I don't know. But side note, kind of jumping around here, but
no problem. I was
excited to find out today earlier that one of the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan cars for Indy 500 will be piloted by none other than Takuma.
Yes.
Otto,
I did see that.
Historically, one of my favorite drivers, so I'm excited for that. And he's the real deal, so you know, they have a shot.
That is a great pickup for them for that race. Obviously, we kind of know what pays the bills in IndyCar, and it's that race. So anytime a team like RLL can get a guy like Sato into their car, I think, yeah, that can be very competitive. Again, as a tangent, but honestly, this loosey-goosey structure for this one anyways, the 500 is shaping up to be pretty fucking awesome this year. There's some really interesting names like Takuma Sato. Kyle Larson of NASCAR fame is running. He'll be the fourth McLaren. And he's already done quite a bit of testing for them. A few weeks ago, they were in Homestead, Miami, testing on that oval. And he'll be doing a lot more testing as the race gets closer. But I really am kind of bummed I can't go this year, but Kyle Larson especially, I think that's going to be interesting because he is pretty great in every machine he touches.
Yeah, he's kind of like Tony Stewart. Doesn't matter what you put him in, he's going to be competitive.
Yeah.
I remember the days of Stewart. He may have done this twice, I don't remember, but he would run the 500 and jump on a helicopter to go down to the Coca-Cola 600.
Yeah.
I have no idea how physically you can and mentally you can do that, especially yeah. a guy like Smoke, who's not compared to the rest of these guys.
He's like a
chubby dirt track guy, but he's, yeah, clearly he's beyond as far as being able to pilot anything that he gets in. So
yeah, Larson will be doing the same thing, so finishing the 500 and private jet down to Charlotte for the 600. That 1,100 miles of racing in one day, that would definitely do a number on you.
It for puts sure you in the books for sure. There's only yeah. a couple of guys who've attempted that, so yeah, McLaren shaping up in the IndyCar series as a real competitor.
Yeah. And,
you know, it's good to see that. We need some unseating of the Penske dominance.
Yeah, the Penske-Ganassi thing. I would love for someone to buck that trend this year.
And some controversy surrounding the 24 hours of Daytona race. I don't know if you picked up on the end of that one where they threw the white flag.
I did actually, because I was watching like the last 15 minutes of that. And of course, you know, they have the clock. Yeah. And they just went across the start finish line. They're like, oh, they just waved the checkered flag. The race is over. They're just like,
yeah.
What the
conspiracy
hell?
Theorists abound. The Cadillac car was pushing very hard.
It was
two laps down to 0.4 of a second when that errant flag was thrown.
Yeah.
Some say that IMSA wanted Porsche to win, and Porsche being a Penske piloted team who had not won the race since 1969.
Oh, I did not know that.
Right. So I take that for what it's worth, I guess. I don't
are
know.
You, I mean, are you subscribing to the conspiracy?
It seems odd to me that car was charging as hard as it was. It could have been a technical error. Mm-hmm. This is a timed race, so it is supposed to go 24 hours. And yeah. typically what happens is they'll throw that flag as or after 24 hours elapses, right? Mm-hmm. That's the way it's supposed to be done. You can't time it so that you cross the line at 24 hours and 0 minutes. But yeah, so, you know, it just, IMSA is, if you haven't watched it, I would ask you to give it a shot. It is really, really entertaining racing.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a, obviously two 24-hour races, one at Daytona, one at Le Mans. And then, you know, there's 12 hours at Sebring and so on and so forth. But fun series to watch, just kind of a tangent there.
Yeah. They typically sort of, and maybe not typically, but there's some overlap with the tracks that they race in IndyCar, be it Detroit or Long Beach. So sometimes the weekends sort of overlap. So, and you get a decent amount of crossover in terms of drivers in IndyCar and IMSA. It's seems to be a bit of a pipeline, I guess, for some of those teams.
Yeah, and you know, the Garage 56 project last year, where
That was awesome.
Built a bespoke car for that. It was a Camaro, quite handsome, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the intriguing thing about that series is you've got, I think it's six different classes, that are all running the same race, but completely different platforms and completely different performance metrics. As far as, you know, the GP or prototype cars are like spaceships.
Yeah.
And you've got, you know, the lesser classes are basically a car that is a production model that's gutted and roll caged and turned into a race car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the races so fun to watch, is they have to, the faster cars are constantly having to manipulate their way through a field of slower entries.
It makes it very interesting. And I just saw this the other day because I saw Alpine of F1 fame, and they also run in the, I think, in the World Endurance Championship, basically the same thing. There was a comparison of size between their like hypercar and their F1 car. And I, for some reason in my mind, I thought the hypercar was maybe not significantly larger, but definitely larger. No, the F1 car is it's as tall and wider. So I think one thing people don't really realize is that the F1 machines are actually huge at the moment, at least.
Yeah, they have a really long wheelbase. And I was looking at some photos and livery photos and stuff, and I really prefer the silhouette of the F2 Formula 2 car.
Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's just a little bit more handsome from a profile. It just seems like it has better, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like aesthetics?
Aesthetically, it is a better looking car than the F1 car, in my opinion. I'm looking at a side view of the Prema Racing F2 entry.
Mm-hmm.
And of note, it just has a much more proportioned, that was the word that I was searching for. Take a look at it if you haven't, you know, and you'll see even the rear wing all the way to the front nose. The front nose on the F1 cars has become so extended, it almost looks insect or alien like.
Yeah.
The F2 cars really, they just have better proportion, I think, and much, much more beautiful wheels.
Yeah. Yes.
They're still running an open style forged wheel that just looks 5,000 times better than this stupid plastic shit that they put over the ones in F1.
Mm-hmm.
But
now I kind of feel like it's weird because a lot of people will tell you F1 have like the best looking machinery, but honestly, I don't think that's been the case for a long time. I think people still have this sort of romantic, like they just think of like the 90s or early 2000s cars, which were awesome looking. But Remember, like, when we watched those races from, like, 2009, 2012, some of those things were butt ugly. Like, just the front nose, ugly as sin, this weird-ass wing in the back, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think some of, you know, obviously, for aero purposes, they've given up some of the aesthetic qualities. Yeah. I don't care for the front wing in modern F1 cars. I don't know. I like a simpler version. That's maybe why the F2 car looks so much better to me, because it's not quite as ridiculous looking.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and that's the other reason I'm attracted to IMSA, is I can identify with some of the lesser, not lesser, but the lower series cars. They just look like a car that, you know, that you could purchase off the showroom,
off
basically
the production line. Yep.
A lot of BMWs out there, which, you know, I'm on that train.
On that train hard. They also just sound so mean. Even the hyper cars, like the, what is it, the GT Daytona or whatever, GTD, those things sound so just mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun series to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
So, go ahead.
You can go.
I'll touch a little bit on preseason testing that's going to happen here. February 21st through the 23rd. It's a limited test time in F1, and it's the only time that they can do testing. So these cars aren't allowed to actually go out during the series and do any kind of test activities. This is the one shot they have at it. It's only 24 hours. It's one event, 24 hours. This year it's going to be at Sakhir in Bahrain.
Of course.
But yeah, is the first GP in Bahrain?
I think it is. I think it is. I will look right now. I seem to recall last year's first race was in Bahrain.
It would make sense. I guess if you're going to haul everything over there for testing, you might as well stay for the first race.
Yeah. Let's see. Testing. Yep. Bahrain is the first race.
Yeah. So these cars, you know, every year they make improvements or upgrades is what it's known in the series. And probably only be able to see testing if you've got the F1 app. I don't know that anybody's going to broadcast it necessarily. Maybe, I don't know. But interestingly, you'll see a lot of contraptions added to the car just
yes.
for data logging and
aerodynamic
weird
stuff.
Fiery shapes, and
it almost looks like they're driving around with like scaffolding,
right?
If you haven't seen it before, in the high vis paint.
Yeah, the flow vis paint is a mixture of fluorescent powder and light oil, and basically, it gives them a visual almost like, I don't know if back in the day. And this was documented fairly well on Ford versus Ferrari. The best way that they could check the aero on the car was to tape hundreds of little strings of wool, like little 4-inch strings of wool all mm-hmm. over the car. And they would physically watch with binoculars to see how those strings reacted and how they were manipulated by aero.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so that this paint, I guess, you can go out and run laps, and then when you bring the car back in, you can visually see from the paint, you know, what's happening with the aero.
Mm-hmm.
So I would watch it just for that. I don't believe I've watched any testing, so I may try to dip in on that just to kind of...
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in watching it. One, obviously, cars on track, never a bad thing. But too. I seem to remember last year us being kind of blindsided by Aston Martin doing so well at the beginning of the year, and then come to find out, I guess people knew, if you watched testing last year, the signs were there. So maybe we'll get, if you watch, we'll get more, much more insight onto where teams are at the beginning of the year, at least.
Yeah, and it's fairly well known too that they're still trying to disguise a lot of their upgrades during testing. So the cars that you see during that event, if you pay close attention, will be somewhat different than what the final product ends up being. So
Yeah, should definitely be interesting. And again, we are just 2 weeks away from the first race. So maybe next week, or I don't know, maybe next week or the week after, we're going to have to do our official preseason predictions. So definitely might be time to start brainstorming that. Maybe
yeah.
after testing.
I'll see what drops on what I can pilfer from the F1 website. Usually there's a list. Lawrence Barreto usually puts a list of predictions out. I think last year we did yay or nay on his predictions.
Yeah.
Did like a mid-season check-in as to how that was all playing out.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. Definitely be on the lookout for that.
It's always a welcome time of year. I know NASCAR had their qualifying for the 500, for the Daytona 500, correct?
That is correct. Last night was qualifying, and then tonight, as we speak, I actually watched the first of these at dinner, the duels at Daytona. Basically, two like mini races. They're 60 laps, and they determine the grid, sort of like a sprint race in F1. It's almost essentially the same format, other than. So last night we learned who is going to be sitting on pole, Joey Logano, and second place, Michael McDowell. Once again, honestly, I think smart money is on a Ford to win. They looked very strong. Toyota was stinking it up last night in qualifying. The top Toyota qualified 19th, so it's going to be an uphill battle probably for the Toyotas. But we'll see. I mean, that race is notoriously sort of a crapshoot, so.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see what the what Chevy does. The Camaro goes away after 2024 production.
Really?
Yeah, they're going to shelf that. Now, what it's going to come back as, I have no idea. And NASCAR, as at least in the modern era, is good at putting cars on a track that don't exist, like a two-door Camry.
Yeah,
There's no
which
such thing.
the Camry and Mustang this year have both seen redesigns in the front, like the nose or bumper. I gotta say, the Mustang looks atrocious, like just butt ugly.
Yeah,
Camry,
well, you
eh.
should see the street car is getting a lot of criticism as well for 2024. I haven't been in love with the platform probably since the mid tens, like 2011 or 12. It just keeps getting bigger and weirder looking.
It just like it's almost sedan-esque, I feel like, some of the years at least.
Yeah, but I have to give Jim Farley, who's the CEO of Ford, and he's a racer too. Everybody else is dumping their internal combustion performance. Dodge has basically shuttered the Hellcats and everything. This is the last year for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Camaro will be done, and Mustang is really the only one that's hanging around as far as a real car that has a real platform and a real V8 engine.
So. Now, okay, we can get in the weeds, I guess, a little bit, but I just, why is that happening? Like, is Chevy, are they just all in on the Corvette, or what's the deal with that?
A lot of it is placating to the green movement.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of talk about how much electric EV platforms you're going to need to have by a certain year mark. It's failed miserably for the most part. Nobody's buying EVs at the pace that a lot of these car companies thought that they were going to.
Yeah.
I see a pivot. I've said this for two or three years now. I do a lot of background reading on the whole EV thing just because it's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll probably see a little bit of a pivot back to a hybrid powertrain where you have a small cubic inch combustion engine that works in tandem with a much smaller battery platform.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is the expense of an all electric vehicle isn't really meeting the consumer demand. So when you have a $65,000 Kia that's all electric, which is a beautiful and great car, but I mean, the average person is not going to walk into a showroom and plop down almost $70,000 for that car.
Yeah.
the Ford Lightning, which is a pickup truck, which is $103,000. They've had to scale back production numbers. They've got them sitting on lots everywhere.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. It's an interesting time.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of the, without getting like deep into politics here, but I feel like we haven't reached like the oh shit point with like this climate change stuff where it's like people are feel the need to like, okay, I think we really need to like change the way we live, I guess. I don't think anyone feels the pressure at the moment.
It's a pretty simple argument. If you do any kind of research into the development of an all-electric vehicle, and they keep pounding the desk about environmental issues,
mm-hmm.
the fact of the matter is that the processes to mine the minerals that are necessary to build battery packs is 150,000 times worse for the planet than
our modern
internal combustion engines are so efficient and basically make zero, almost next to no emission
mm-hmm.
compared to cars even from 10 years ago. They're very clean and mm-hmm. they're fuel efficient. It's posturing. A lot of these car manufacturers fell into the trap of we have to hug trees to make everybody feel good.
Yeah. The mining thing is bad for sure.
Yeah.
Not only, go ahead.
No, the battery technology will change. Okay. It has to, but even now, they're mostly a lithium ion based battery, and lithium is one of the most dangerous mining operations and most impactful to the environment.
I mean,
not to mention that most of it is done in third world countries.
It's you know, one step up from slave labor. So
pretty much, Pretty much.
Yeah, that's Elon Musk won't tell you that, but
no. But you know, the other real truth is that the infrastructure in the United States is lacking. I mean, I've read tens of articles about the charging network and how terrible it is.
Yeah.
Sans Tesla, who created their own charging network, because that, as goofy as Elon Musk is, he sometimes he's almost genius-like.
Yeah, I mean, he's a smart businessman. There's no getting around that. Their
network is so good that they've actually opened it to the first manufacturer was Ford that went to Tesla and said, hey, we need to work together here. We want to use your charging network.
Hmm.
So I don't know. That's a whole nother, you know, you could do an hour on that.
Yeah.
Well, most people would probably fall past.
The eyes are glazing over as we speak.
Right.
But, that's all right. So I think we'll go ahead and leave it there for racing for now. Definitely interested to see how the Daytona 500 plays out. You know, Grandpa Gary, if you're listening, let's maybe do a little maybe anti-rain dance as the Sunday forecast in Daytona Beach looks terrible right now. But we might be waiting and watching umbrellas over cars for a while on Sunday.
Yeah, that's never good.
No, it is not.
Yeah, well, we got 42 and 20 out of racing, so that's okay.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all. The soccer segment's going to be similarly loosey-goosey here. When you take a week off, there's just shit happens. A lot of shit happens in the world of soccer. I do want to touch on Celtic and Aberdeen and sort of the, I guess, the current situation at Celtic at the moment. And I know, again, maybe memory is probably a little fuzzy, but even to the best of your ability here, this is not exactly classic Celtic soccer this season. Am I wrong here?
No, it's. I wouldn't say it's tough to watch, but in a lot of cases, it has been.
Yeah, I was going to say, it actually, I think, has been a bit of a chore this season,
you know,
to watch.
Aberdeen, at the time of this particular fixture, sat number 9, I believe. Mm-hmm.
They still do, I believe.
Celtic tied with Rangers at number 1, and Aberdeen was just like a dog on a bone.
Mm-hmm.
They were fairly relentless during this game.
There seems to be no intimidation factor with Celtic at the moment. I think teams know that this is not a team firing on all cylinders. The players, I don't feel, are up to par currently, and the manager, Brendan Rodgers, equally, I'm not sold on, in the boardroom at Celtic, who essentially did next to nothing in the winter transfer window. I don't think they are set up to win this title this year, but I'll allow you to continue.
It's going to be really tough unless... How many games are left?
13. So
they're going to have to make a market improvement. Not market, like fish market.
Market. Yeah.
they just can't get tossed around by a team like Aberdeen, which is what basically they did. And I'd have a note here, and maybe you can give me some information as to why there were so many empty seats in that stadium.
Yeah. I think there's a couple factors there. One is Aberdeen just kind of sucked this year. So I think their fan base, which is actually quite large by Scottish football standards, I think their fan base is a little fed up. They fired their manager. At this moment, it's Neil Warnock, who is sort of an old head in English soccer that's moved now to Aberdeen in Scotland. But at the time this game was played, it was an interim manager. So things aren't really all that rosy in Aberdeen right now. This is a team that finished third last year. So to be sitting in ninth, I think a lot of fans are sort of protesting with their dollar, essentially. I did also read, and I'm not sure the validity, that the attendance number is capped there for quote-unquote safety reasons. I don't really know what that's about, but essentially there's a couple factors as to why there were quite a few empty seats.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, the first half of this game, there was a... In the seventh minute, we had Kyogo to Abada, but it ended up being off sides, I believe.
Yeah.
I felt like it could have been 3-0. There was an awful lot of opportunity here for Celtic that they just didn't really capitalize on.
Yeah, that's exactly what has been happening. Kyogo is not in particularly grand form at the moment, and the evidence was pretty abundantly clear in this one. Just not on it at the moment for whatever reason. Equally, not really getting much service from the wing, from either wing. Abada seems all but checked out here at Celtic. Some of that might be sort of politically charged with the whole Israel-Palestine thing. He's Israeli. Celtic fans pretty strongly in support of Palestine, but that's neither here nor there. But he's probably out the door come the summer. I don't know. I don't really seem to think he'll be contributing too much more this season. We saw the first goal. This was actually his first appearance, too, from Nicholas Kuhn, a new signing. So if you didn't recognize that name when he scored in the 63rd minute for Celtic, that is because he is quite literally a brand new player for Celtic.
Yeah, I mean, I did not recognize him, but thankfully he was able to put something in the net. So.
Yeah, that was definitely well needed because obviously 50th minute, Bojan Miavsky scores a goal kind of out of nowhere for Aberdeen. I felt like it was sort of against the run of play because Aberdeen had not really created all that much up to that point.
It was quote unquote a brilliant finish by the broadcast crew who seemed a little bit anti-Celtic this particular match, if I recall.
Yeah, I don't, who knows? Everything is... It's either you are or aren't Celtic in Scotland, so who knows with that. But, just not super inspiring soccer at all from Celtic at the moment. Struggling to get results against ninth-place Aberdeen is not where you want to be. They did win against Hibs after that in the league and St. Mirren in the Cup, neither of which were... televised. So basically what we're looking at now as we turn our attention to the table is a incredibly tight finish for the title this year. So just to give you a little bit of color on that, here's the current table. First place, Celtic, 25 matches played. Their goal difference is +40, so they've scored 40 more goals than they've conceded. points, 61. Second place, Rangers, played 25, goal difference, 40, points, 61. So there is quite literally nothing to separate them at the moment other than a head-to-head record. So,
Will they meet? Will they play each other?
Yeah, they're guaranteed to play two more times this year. The next of those, I believe, should be April. And they kind of play twice relatively quickly at the end of the season. So you'll get one in April and then a couple weeks after that. So this is, while, of course, Celtic have not been playing amazingly well recently, what has sort of spawned in because of that is a fantastic title race. Where, you know, last year, Celtic, you remember, we wrapped it up the first week of May with like five games to play.
Yeah.
So I really don't expect that to happen. And Rangers have, they've been playing a lot better than Celtic, I would say, since they met in January. So I don't know. It's sort of a flip of a coin if Celtic can kind of turn a corner and start, you know, playing well, then who knows?
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, so we're definitely keeping a close eye on that. Rangers travel to St. Johnstone this weekend, so that'll definitely be worth checking out for sure. As for the Premier League, things are also maybe not equally as tight, but very tight indeed. Liverpool sit first with 54 points. Man City just 2 points behind with a game in hand on 52 points. Arsenal also on 52 points. They took down Liverpool about a week and a half ago now. They ended up winning that big fixture. Ange's Tottenham Hotspur sort of sniffing around in fourth on 47 points, not totally out of the title race, but they're probably more gunning towards a top four Champions League spot anyways. And then at the bottom of the table, things are, I would say, equally as interesting as Nottingham Forest, Luton Town, and Everton are all separated by just 2 points, trying to avoid relegation. In terms of some marquee fixtures for this weekend, Man City and Chelsea play. That should be a goal fest, you would think. Chelsea, if you remember, pretty horrific defensively. As well as Liverpool taking on Brentford. So there's definitely some interesting things going on in England. And this is sort of a story developing within soccer that is becoming harder and harder to deny. So we don't really ever talk about German soccer. However, there's something really, really interesting going on there right now. So this might be a name you've heard of in passing, but Bayern Munich, they have won the past 11 league titles in a row. So obviously, you know, they're consistently dominant. Now, last year, it was taken all the way to the final day where Borussia Dortmund, their sort of fiercest rival, at least in the modern age, all they had to do was win, and they did not. So Bayern ended up winning the title again. However, this year, Bayer Leverkusen have gone undefeated in their first 21 matches. And last weekend played Bayern Munich and beat them 3-0.
Wow.
Yeah. So they actually lead the Bundesliga, the German Bundesliga, by 5 points. And it's like, this is like the biggest fucking thing that's happened in Germany in years, obviously. So that is, and I challenge my co-host and listeners, just look up Bayer Leverkusen highlights 2023-2024. This is some of the, for lack of a better word, sexiest soccer you will ever see. So this is sort of a story becoming harder and harder to ignore as it develops. So this might be something we have to keep paying attention to over here.
Yeah. Any vehicle to watch that league? Or
yeah, so
we don't have a whole lot of coverage here.
Actually, it's really easy. It's on ESPN Plus, literally every match of that league. So okay. Yeah. Very
I would be open to if you want to choose a fixture for
yeah, I think that would definitely be worth doing, because if you haven't watched the Bundesliga before, which I know you haven't, but in speaking sort of to listeners as well, it is very fast-paced, lots of goals. So, yeah, I think this might actually be worth checking out. So maybe we'll do a Bayer Leverkusen match for next time out, just to shake things up a little bit.
All right.
Well,
yeah. So the 1-1 tie with this one. I don't know if we got to the end of that or not, but
yeah, that one, Aberdeen Celtic,
right?
Finished 1-1, and like I said,
nearly 85th minute score by Miowski. This could have went 2-1 pretty quickly.
Yeah, for the Celtic inclined, you sort of saw your life flash before your eyes in that moment.
Take the draw.
Yeah, so again, we're going to keep a close eye on that as things continue to develop in Scotland. And one of the great things about soccer is there's always interesting things going on. So we might reach further abroad next time out.
Well, I think that's the show.
Yeah, we actually, considering the rather, I don't know, unorganized and perhaps a little, I don't know, tangentially inclined show, still got 58 minutes, so not bad.
There you go. Well, lots more to come. We're just kicking off racing in general, so there will be more conversation as the 2024 F1 season presents itself, and we will continue to keep a close eye on a few other series that you and I are both interested in. So more to come on that.
Most definitely. Only ramping up with both racing and soccer as we get closer to the business end as well. So lots of exciting things to come.
All right. Well, if you have nothing else.
I do not.
Wrap this thing up and get gone here.
Yes, sir.
Our sole executive producer for this particular show is Richard Tanaka. This has been Tackling the Chicane, copyright 2024. We'll see you next time.